All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, October 26, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is a chilly 40 degrees. And according to AccuWeather, with rain, snow here in upstate New York. I went out there for a second. I thought it was hailing. And I was like, no, I looked down and it was all little wet spots, so it was raining. But guess not, it's hailing or rain snowing. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show, Preparing for the Future of Artificial Intelligence. And I know, normally my titles are a little more creative than that, but there was a plan there. See, that was the name of Obama's artificial intelligence framework that he released at that event we talked about a couple times now that involved the University of Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon University. We found out Pittsburgh was involved too. And he really kind of opened the doors to releasing the hounds, making this another big federal initiative. Remember, he's been the one who has been behind releasing all of these different tempests and genies out of the bottle between precision medicine and the Brain Initiative and weaponizing space, all in the name of saving us from asteroids. So why not? Let's let AI go too. But hey, by titling my show the same thing as his blueprint, when anyone is searching for his blueprint, guess what else is going to come up in the search engine? So we'll see if it helps. Anyway, so we looked at a lot of things. This is AI week here on Before the First Cup. And I don't know, over the last couple days, I don't even remember. I'm kind of have brain dead, but that's all right. We'll get there. Get a little caffeine into me. I'll get up to speed. We ended the show looking at how China has pretty much eclipsed the U.S. now. And China's pretty scary for a lot of different reasons. China is the sleeping giant. And we don't hear much out of China. Xi has been very quiet, and he's working with some of his other partners like Russia. And they have that whole BRICS thing going on. You know, I just saw a couple weeks ago they had another BRICS meeting, and Putin was there. I'm sure Xi was there as well. We just had that Durante, I think that's how you say his name, out of the Philippines, go over and announce his partnership and how he was dumping the U.S. Not that, you know, the Philippines are any big deal, but the Philippines do go way back in history. They're kind of one of our mad science countries where we did lots of evil things during wartime, or even not during wartime. I mean, we've done that all over the world and left a big disaster, left lots of scars and really some horrifying things, all in the name of science and experimentation. But we were looking at China, and now China has pulled way ahead in AI research. They have Beidou there, and the guy that went over to Beidou came from Google. Beidou at one point was buying Intel processors, too. We had looked at that maybe a year or two ago, and that's what they were using to make the supercomputer, except they were just putting them all in series in this huge room, and John Kerry came out and decided that he was going to sanction the sales of Intel processors to China. And I'm pretty certain that was across the board. And it was all in the name of trying to pull back the reins on China's push forward to overtake us in the field of AI. Remember, James Clapper came out, and all these technologies are considered potential weapons of mass destruction. You know, Obama released this whole supercomputing and big data initiative as well. Well, you know, the faster the computers get, the less our puny little brains are going to matter. And I told you back in the day, it was always bigger, better, faster. Everybody remembers that. Spend, spend, spend. You got to have the biggest and the fastest. And it was all fueled by video games. 3D engines running through, you know, rendered as close to reality as possible, virtual landscapes. You know, that takes a lot of processing power to be able to keep refreshing that screen, and especially in 3D and especially in high resolution. And really, video gaming is what pushed the development of the PC further and further. And it was every year or so, there was a big turnover. And even though you maybe spent $3,000, I mean, for a while it was like $5,000. It was even way more. I mean, let's go way, way, way back. But I'm talking like in the days once PCs got to be mainstream, you wanted to buy a gaming PC, you're still looking at $2,000-$3,000. And go look at a notebook, one of those Alienware. They're pretty damn expensive. What sweet machines, man. I would love, my notebook sucks so bad too, that Alienware notebook with the, and I don't know if it actually moved back and forth like a Cylon eye, but there was this red LED strip of light that went kind of around the top, I think, of the laptop case. And it was a pretty sweet notebook. I would love one of them, but literally $2,000 or $3,000 for the sucker, but it's got top of the line hardware. What would happen is, you know, they get everyone all into these games and whatever, and look at all the new features, and then they start writing new operating systems because, hey, we got this new chipset. So, hey, we can add more memory, and, hey, we can put a faster hard drive interface on the board. Let's get a new, better operating system, and they'd roll out a new OS, and everything would be new, and then all the new software would come out, all the new applications. And guess what, Jenny? You know, you got to keep all your old stuff, and now you just lost support and upgrades. And, I mean, they're still pulling that now, but we've gotten to the point eventually where we have ample power to do just about anything now. And that was with the advent of the cloud and distributed computing, where you could load balance across multiple machines. And I mean, that came even before cloud. We were doing that for data resiliency in that, and to be able to load balance when you had lots of global locations and people coming in. You know, even web, if you had a large website, you'd have to build it the same way. You can only take so much incoming traffic. So let's not get off on a tangent. But it really has accelerated things to the point where now we don't have to worry much about computing power. And if your puny little computer isn't fast enough, well, why don't you go use some cloud services? You don't even need a hard drive anymore. You just need a basic dumb terminal. We've gone back to where it used to be, where you had the big mainframe. Well, now you have the big cloud. It's pretty much the same thing, just now in the 21st century. You know, and as all this stuff is getting stored out there, we already know they've been splicing and dicing us for 20 years, more, 25, on the internet. And all those free services, like I said, don't feed the machine. Because if you're using your real name and your real pictures and your real account and you're doing everything on there and all your surfing and all your messaging, that's an easy way for them to just do a download, and they got everything about you. Split it up. Make up a couple names. Get yourself some sort of hidemyass.com software and make it look like you're coming in from Singapore. You know, you don't want to make it that easy to be bagged and tagged and tracked. You know, and this is just the beginning, and I've said that so many times. So we've been dumb about our security on the internet already, and it's so ubiquitous now that no one even thinks about it. And now with this advent of all these intelligent, smart machines, we have the smart home and the smart clothes and the smart doctor and the smart car, the smart phone, smart toilet. Talked about that too. Your smart mental health app coming to a phone near you. So all these smart things roll out. We discovered that AI is going to be behind a lot of these. And if not AI, we talked about a couple different kinds. It was narrow band AI versus artificial general intelligence, which is maybe more like Watson, where he can just learn anything. But as this intelligence is rolling out in software, and like I said, whether it be actual AI or algorithms that have been programmed to be able to filter proper information and do things based upon your responses or your reaction to something, they're going to be bagging and tagging things such as our reactions, things such as our, I don't know, behavior, our voice patterns, our scariest images. Guys, I got to share a story with you. Hold on. Because honestly, this was like probably even more frightening than that Google AI art project. I don't know if you ever saw that. We never covered it because it was just kind of eye candy for people to go out there and click on it to see what it looked like. But I don't remember if it was just general images on the internet or if they pointed it toward a cache of photos or maybe did a Google image search or something. But Google's deep learning started doing art a while back. And if you've never seen it, just do a little search there, something about Google and art or Google AI and art. And it was kind of a disturbing picture as to what maybe an artificial intelligence brain would look like inside when it was sleeping and some of the images that were there. But it was like this freaky, stuck between dimension, nightmare-esque, oops, I did acid accidentally type picture with all these colors and shapes and geometric patterns and then faces popping out of like armpits. It was really a frightening looking thing. I couldn't look at it for very long. Well, they had a story the other day. This one was out of Popular Mechanics. I don't really like this magazine, but the whole story kind of caught my attention. It's October 22nd, 2016. So this was 4 days ago. All in the name of Halloween. MIT's Nightmare AI Images Will Haunt Your Dreams. I was like, uh-oh. But this is what caught me. Help MIT. Yeah, help the lizards, Pitts. Remember, MIT, the home of the nanotechnology and in cahoots with Harvard for the Broad Institute Synthetic Biology. MIT is not a good place. I mean, it might be a really good place if you're into technology and you really didn't give a shit what was going to be used, what this technology was going to be used for. But as far as humanity's sake, looking from the outside in, I don't think MIT is a pretty good place. I think MIT is a scary place where they are all in, balls out, looking at how they're going to get themselves published or get more financing dollars from DARPA or some other federal agency for all this research that they're doing for them. Anyway, listen to this. We know all about this brain project going on and finding out ways to manipulate our brain. Of course, being able to conquer the brain is a big step. And being able to build artificial intelligence, we even saw that in a story yesterday, all the big steps that have to happen. And being able to understand and reproduce the human brain is a big part of that. Well, listen to this. Help MIT learn what will scare you on their new Halloween-themed deep learning site. It's like, oh, look, it's Halloween. You know how funny? On Halloween, you get scared. Yes, well, this isn't quite the same. In the spirit of Halloween, MIT created a website called Nightmare. You gotta love a website called Nightmare, exploring the power of AI to make everything from the Eiffel Tower to random faces really, really creepy. The website showcased these efforts, including many spooky landscapes along with distorted, horrifying faces. The creepiness of deep learning software-generated images isn't exactly news. We talked about this. Google's Deep Dream, that's what it was called, Deep Dream project in particular, is known for transforming images into many-eyed, I remember that picture, many-eyed dog-faced images. That was really horrifying. It was like a dog with all these eyes on it. It looked like some mutant. But this is the first AI that we have seen that is intended specifically to make things look scary. And here, I'm going to put this in the chat. You guys can go look at these faces because it's pretty horrifying. Like, click on it and zoom in. To that end, MIT is asking the internet, oh, that pesky internet, to rate their AI-generated haunted faces. And hey, by doing so, you will help the software. Ding, ding, don't feed the machine. You will help MIT's AI software learn what freaks us out. Don't teach them. They're going to make them as horrifying as possible and then see which get the most horrifying reactions. So it's someday when these machines turn on humans, they're going to be able to wage psychological warfare on us people. In the very last sentence, you got to love this. Your efforts surely will be useful to our future robot overlords. Da, da, da. I don't know, guys. When they start mixing together now psychological experiments and artificial intelligence, you really got to worry, especially out of a place such as MIT. So we've seen that artificial intelligence is moving into so many different realms. Last night, if anybody was around, we watched a couple interviews with Elon Musk. By the way, guys, we were doing some beta testing on streaming again. And I know it's been a long time, but it's just I don't have it in me most times. But yesterday, I was all caught up because I've been trying to get a lot of stuff done this week. And so after the live broadcasts ended last night, we fired up the one tool that I have here where I can do multi things on a screen. I actually got the ponytail cam going on YouTube. And we were broadcasting a couple interviews. It was in private, though. But we all watched together a couple interviews with Elon Musk talking about AI, talking about the future, talking about his fears. And really, I mean, he's a smart cookie. And when I hear stuff from Elon Musk, he's another one that I pay a lot of attention to. I told you, except I don't totally trust him. And when they asked him an interview question about his best case scenario for AI, his answer was, well, that it would finally, you know, augment us. And that would be the easiest way is to pull it inside of us and start integrating. So I don't know if I like that too much. But still, he's got a lot of good ideas. That one's not one of them. And he was talking about self-driving cars as well. And he even talked about the two different types of AI. One is the narrow, where it is completely boxed in for one task. So it is an intelligence that is for driving, like a self-driving car. It is an intelligence that is for being a lawyer, like, I don't know, bankruptcy lawyer, divorce lawyer. It is an intelligence that is a robo-surgeon, you know, or general intelligence, such as Watson. Watson was on Jeopardy and he answered all these questions and he can search online and he can draw conclusions and he can reason, which is kind of where they've been heading now is with the swarm learning. And again, some of the stuff happening at MIT and now Google's on board where they can have one robot learn something, push it up to the cloud, and then all the connected robots will learn the same skill. That is going to be huge in things such as manufacturing. You know, in that one Elon Musk interview we watched yesterday, you didn't find out till the end of the interview. You saw all these industrialized robots moving around behind the glass wall behind him. And you didn't find out till near the end of that interview that that actually was the Tesla factory building cars. But, you know, we have South Korea, who's on the bandwagon to build all these robots for industry. They sold a whole ton of them to Foxconn in China. 60,000 jobs are placed already and more coming. And I'm sure if I looked really hard, I could find more. But that's all I had to see. I mean, that was just one install with 60,000 people out of work. And we know this is coming. And now the White House rolls out their big grand plan for AI. You know, don't worry about it, people. It's coming, but it's all going to be for your own good. We found out yesterday when we looked at that story about tech professionals giving their take on Obama's plan for artificial intelligence. And one of the things that they said they were disappointed about was how he was really not being realistic when he was looking at how many jobs this was going to take and how many jobs this was going to open up new fields for. And, you know, just because it's been like that in the past with each different revolution, like the Industrial Revolution, you know, it put a lot of people out of work, like horseshoers with the advent of the car and the assembly line. It created millions of more jobs, but, you know, they don't think that that might be the same in the future. So, you know, we've been looking over the last week or so at how a lot of this artificial intelligence, this isn't going to be targeting, like, fast food workers. I mean, it might be fast food workers. Harvey's, I think, was one of them. One of those hamburger chains. They were going to start rolling out entire restaurants that were human-free. But we also have the self-driving car and the self-driving tractor-trailer. I don't know if you guys saw, there was a story yesterday about a self-driving semi in Colorado. I don't think I even posted that. I put it into chat. There was a self-driving semi in Colorado. Very first one, it delivered 50,000 beers. And think about that. Think about the decent pay that over-the-road truck drivers make. Everything's got to be delivered. And as these autonomous semis start rolling out everywhere, I mean, they've been testing these in Europe. They did an entire convoy back about probably six, 8 months, maybe even near a year ago now. They did this whole convoy across Europe and everything worked out great. They've been testing them in Vegas, down in Nevada, now apparently in Colorado as well. Think about those jobs. And I mean, that's not even white collar, that's a truck driver, but it was still a blue collar, decent paying job. And now let's go to automation and factories. You know, the auto industry has always been one that has cried the blues every time there's been some new type of robotics and automation of manufacturing. And it slowly has been whittling away at our manufacturing infrastructure. And I mean, there really isn't much left now. And those were well-paying blue-collar jobs. But now they're going after the white-collar jobs. You look at the Cyber Grand Challenge software that can go patch and find holes and fix viruses and whatever on the fly. Remember, problem reaction solution after those hacks last Friday. Mark my word, that shape-shifting DARPA Cyber Grand Challenge software is going to be a solution here very shortly to help us secure that totally insecure, according to the experts, Internet of Things, that caused the takedown of all those websites on the East Coast last week. But we're also talking that software will replace a lot of network administrators for at least patching and security purposes. A lot of security professionals as well. We have AI that was hired, talked about Ross before, hired by its first official law firm. We have Watson working with 20 hospitals, right? We listen to that. 30% of the cases for diagnoses and treatment, they discovered they missed something, and Watson found it. Those are huge paying jobs as well for oncologists. You know, healthcare is a biggie because of precision medicine, but it's all going to be coming here soon. And every story I read now, they're like, yep, well, the robots are going to take all the jobs. Sorry about that, Johnny. We've been postulating that for a while, but we're pretty certain of it now. Well, find another one after Ross. Ross was a bankruptcy attorney, I believe. Yes. And Ross was using Watson as his back ends. You can read this for a minute. AI lawyer Ross has been hired by his first official law firm. We read this when it first came out. This is from May 11th, 2016. Ross, a very smart artificial co-worker. I gotta love that. Kill all robots. Law firm Baker and Hostetler has announced that they are employing IBM's AI Ross. So IBM's AI not only is going to do your cancer treatment and get in your underwear, but he'll also manage your bankruptcy proceeding. Baker and Hostetler has announced that they are employing IBM's AI Ross to handle their bankruptcy practice, which at the moment consists of nearly 50 lawyers. Well, as soon to be 49 unemployed ones, I bet. According to CEO and co-founder Andrew Arruda, other firms have also signed licenses with Ross. And remember, you know, I have a friend who has a daughter who went to law school, spent $250,000 on her education, and she couldn't really find jack shit after she got out of college. I mean, a couple lawyer jobs, but definitely not paying anything to be able to support getting yourself a place to live, getting a vehicle, and paying off $250,000 in student loans for 30-plus years. And now, if we're looking at AI being able to take over a lot of law practice, and remember Watson, and this is the same Watson that's running at those 20 cancer institutes, just putting them on a different path instead of understanding cancer and genomics. So let's understand puny human law. They had said that Watson could read 1 million books a minute or a second. I don't remember. It was just something that was so astronomical that you couldn't even comprehend how intelligent, how fast, and how outpaced we actually are. In 5 short years, Watson went from learning to read to diagnosing the world's toughest cancers that stumped 30 oncologists sitting in a boardroom. Well, now that same intelligence, same basic intelligence named Watson, is signing up to be lawyers all over the place. Ross, the world's first artificially intelligent attorney built on IBM's cognitive computer, Watson, was designed to read and understand language, postulate hypotheses when asked questions, research, and then generate responses along with references and citations to back up its conclusions. And you know, right when this story came out, Obama had released some tech paper that was published in a scientific journal, and it had all these references and citations, and I don't remember what it was on, but it came out like within a week or two of the story, and I was like, oh, you know, he's such a sneaky sneaky person that I would almost guarantee you that's how Obama is, like, whipping out all this stuff, publishing all this stuff. I mean, he's been publishing articles in CNN and rolling out all these initiatives and executive orders. I mean, how is this guy doing that when he's trying to run the free world? He's too busy deciding who to bomb and whose resources to go steal next. I find that hard to believe just in my day. I'm not doing anywhere near that much destruction like he is. But I don't have the energy or the mental capacity or the time or the effort or the patience to be able to deal with much more than what I deal with here on a daily basis. Hell, I mean, I'd love to be writing stories too again for anti-media, but doing this show 5 days a week and 35 other shows I produce here and having a family and a life and a kid, I just can't do it. I just don't have the physical, mental, emotional capacity to do anymore. So I just don't see how this is possible that he's whipping all this stuff out. But don't worry about it, because IBM's Watson can read, research, understand language, postulate hypotheses, and then generate responses with references and citations to back up his conclusion. And Russ also learns from experience, gaining speed and knowledge the more you feed him. And, you know, Obama will get along good with Ross. Ross and Obama are both lawyers. I bet he was a beta tester. I don't know. Just a hunch. But I remember when this story came out, and I was like, how unusual. How unusual that Obama's just releasing these papers with all these characteristics that they just told us that Ross, the new Watson AI lawyer, can do as well. Anyway, you ask yourself questions in plain English as you would a colleague, and Ross then reads through the entire body of law and returns a cited answer and topical readings from legislation, case law, and secondary sources to get you up to speed quickly. I wonder if they're even looking at this for the Supreme Court. You know, they got that Scalia, that mysterious Scalia opening just in time. And they got Ross, the AI lawyer, sitting around here. Maybe we don't even appoint a human. Because, hey, screw it. Humans have foibles. Humans base decisions on emotions. They're not supposed to, but it's really hard not to. AI won't. AI doesn't have any emotions. AI is just going to draw conclusions based on conclusions and decide whether or not to execute you. Very plain and simple. Cut and dry, black and white. There's no gray with AI. Ross also monitors the law, just like Watson did for monitoring any new papers of research in the cancer industry. In the law industry, Ross monitors the law around the clock to notify you of new court decisions that can affect your case. Ross also minimizes the time it takes by narrowing down results from 1,000 to only the most highly relevant answers and presents the answers in a more casual, understandable language. It also keeps up to date with developments in the legal system, specifically those that affect your case. Baker and Hostetler's chief information officer explains the rationale behind this latest hire, quote, "At Baker Hostetler, we believe that emerging technologies, disruptive emerging technologies, like cognitive computing and other forms of machine learning, can help enhance the services we deliver to our clients." Yeah, I gotta wonder, I'm assuming a lot of this is being done as software as a service. This must be like AI as a service. I know IBM has their API, the Watson API out there, that you can actually build into your applications to give it intelligence. I'm sure there's a fee, $29.95 a month. They probably give you 30 days free to start messing around with it. But then you're going to be paying a monthly fee to access those services. And, you know, once you get used to them and you build your whole business process around it, they lock you in there. So it's very difficult to move to a different service once your whole back end's running on it. But at $29.95, and you know, I just throw that price out there. Who knows how much it is? You got to wonder what kind of prices the law firm is going to get from the customer for that. So we got Ross, and Ross is a highly superior lawyer to any of these other high-paid clowns that we're paying $250,000, $300,000 to a year or more, and vacations, and, you know, expenses. They need their cell phone and their car allowance and their travel, and oh, they go take clients out. So yeah, we got to kick them that money back too as well. Or maybe that's just a write-off. But regardless, and pensions and retirement or whatever, having a human is very expensive. Having a robot is a one-time cost if you buy him. And a subscription service if you do it in the cloud. No upfront costs. You just pay for it every month. You can turn it off if you decide to. And that's the way of the future, guys. That's what's going to happen. Baker Hostetler has been using Ross since the first days of his deployment. And we are proud to partner with a true leader in the industry. Yes, good old IBM, who helped the Nazis, as we continue to develop additional AI legal assistance. So look out, people, because now October 24th, 2 days ago, new story. This one came out of phys.org. AI predicts the outcome of human rights trials. So not only do we have AI that's acting as a lawyer, but now we have an AI that's predicting judicial decisions. The judicial decisions of the European Court of Human Rights have been predicted to a 79% accuracy using an artificial intelligence method developed by researchers at UCL, which is the University of Sheffield, as well as the University of Pennsylvania. Ding, Penn U, there they are. The same Penn U that's working on CRISPRing humans, hoping they get the approval for December. The method is the first to predict the outcomes of a major international court by automatically analyzing case text using a machine learning algorithm. Quote, this one says, we don't see AI replacing judges or lawyers, no. But we think that they'd find it useful for rapidly identifying patterns. And guys, that's one of the big things about these algorithms. Pattern recognition will allow them to behavioral monitor too, don't forget, as well as many other things. But we think that they would find it useful for rapidly identifying patterns in cases that lead to certain outcomes. And it could also be a valuable tool for highlighting which cases are most likely to be violations of the European Convention on Human Rights. And I don't know if we're going to read about exactly how they did this, but let's look at this. In developing this method, the team found that the judgments by this European High Court are highly correlated to non-legal facts rather than directly legal arguments, suggesting that judges of the courts are, in the jargon of legal theory, realists rather than formalists. And this supports the findings of previous studies of the decision-making processes of other high-level courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court. Ding, ding, ding. Remember I told you, we got an open seat there. They're messing around already with teaching AI all about law and how to translate it and how to figure out whether or not it's a winner and how to, you know, research and come up with conclusions and write papers with citations. I don't think it's going to be too much longer before we see something like that, like the grand poobah of law named Ross Watson. I don't know. It's just frightening. You know, and how long even before that? Screw hiring some lunatic president. Screw trying to spend all this money to elect somebody that nobody really wants. Hey, why don't we just rule the country by some artificial intelligence? Let him make the decisions, because my brain hurts when I think too hard. American public, you know, you got to worry about that. And they have already groomed society to step right up and hand it over to the machine. You know, we can eat grapes, guys, by robot sex bots at some point in the future, wearing our 3D VR goggles being streamed HD from a 5G millimeter wave satellite, CubeSat satellite up in space in the future. I think it could happen. Previous studies have predicted outcomes based on the nature of the crime or the policy position of each judge. So this is the first time the judgments have been predicted using analysis of texts prepared by the court. We expect that this sort of tool will improve efficiencies of high-level, in-demand courts. But to become reality, we need to next test it against more articles and case data submitted to the court. So put on a seatbelt. Again, just the beginning, but they're already tinkering with it. We're tinkering with whether or not robots and artificial intelligence are going to be able to interpret law appropriately and predict decisions. And we saw something not too long ago. There was some sort of, I don't know if it was gambling. I don't know. I'll skip that one. There was something where they were already using this to predict and people were placing their bets. And it wasn't gambling, but it might as well be. It was on the stock market, I believe. Yeah, so same difference, right? What they were looking at, maybe lawsuits that could potentially affect like future companies or whatever, and they were running algorithms against it to see whether or not it was going to be a winner or a loser to decide where to put your money. And I could see that happening as well. It's called predictive analytics. And they've been using that in law enforcement, a lot of different things. Even Israel came up with some sort of facial recognition software that could go in and not only use 230 point to determine who you are, but then there were additional traits in there that looked at your ancestry and your genetic facial features that might have been passed down that would give them some indication as to what your ethnicity was, whether you came from this stock or that stock or whatever. You know, people of Mongolia might have shorter foreheads. So if you have some Mongolian DNA in you, hey, look, you got a short forehead. And we've predicted, and I don't know, I'm just picking on Mongolians. I don't remember what the actual case study was, but it was something along those lines. Your ethnicity, statistically speaking, potentially could have more issues with crime, or potentially could have more issues with illness or whatever. And they were able to determine with a high reliability, mind you, what type of future actions you might potentially take just based upon statistics with your face. All right, so we found out Stephen Hawking, another smart cookie, another one of those people who's come out and spoken against the machine, well, out of one side of his mouth. Now the other side of his mouth is sitting there. We found out yesterday he just opened himself a brand new facility that was backed by a bunch of the different universities, all kinds of money to help develop AI that isn't going to wipe out humanity, or so he says. Stephen Hawking, so this is a story from October 21st, 2016, 5 days ago. Stephen Hawking says that most of our history is, quote, the history of stupidity. Which, hey, I don't know. I think you might have that one right, at least in a large respect. Humanity, in general, has been pretty dumb. We keep repeating the same mistakes over and over and over again. We're about ready, as Elon Musk says, to summon the demon. And I would tend to agree with that. You know, I saw a clip on that where, and you know what? Let's do it, just because I didn't play any clippies today. Let me see if I can pull me in. It's a real tiny one. But Elon Musk explains in this little, like, 50-second clippy what he meant by summoning the demon. I always forget what my name is on Skype. What he meant, I gotta unplug my speakers. What he meant by summoning the demon in regards to artificial intelligence. And hold on here. We are summoning the demon. Here we go. See if I can turn it up. Up, 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 up. Stop. Up, 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 up. You guys get me singing. It always happens. All right. Here, we'll cue this up. Here we go.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon. You know those stories where there's the guy with the pentagram and the holy water, and he's like, yeah, you sure you can control the demon? Didn't work out.
I take it there will be no Hell 9000 going up to Mars.
Now, wait, you guys have to hear this, because, yeah, he's right. You know, all those stories about summoning the demon, the pentagram, the holy water, and he's like, ah, I can control the demon till the demon gets there, and then, whoa, he gets, who knows, possessed or eaten alive or whatever. Horrible things usually happen in movies, at least. But this dude in the audience says, so, oh, guess we have no Hell 9000. You know, I've been telling you guys that even though in all these stories, they're like, don't worry about it. It's 50 years from now. Artificial intelligence is nowhere. But Elon is a guy in the know. Elon has nightmares about artificial intelligence. He's been warning about it. He's helping develop it. The man is an engineer. In one of those interviews we watched yesterday, we found out he's not the business guy. I mean, keeps an eye on the business, but he's got other people to do that. He's in with the engineers, helping develop the product on a daily basis. He's a smart cookie. But one of the things that he follows up here to that Hail 9000 comment, and you're going to see, he's right on board with me. This is way more advanced, and it's exponential, like we've been saying. So here, listen.
Hail 9000 would be easy. It's way more complex than, I mean, to put Hail 9000 to shame. Yeah. That's like a puppy dog.
We'll put Hail 9000 to shame. He's like a puppy dog. I don't think he talks anymore there. All right. So anyway, I just had to play that. Is that Summoning the Demon? I remember when that first came out, kind of caught my attention because I was like, what does he mean by that? Because that's exactly how I feel. This is some evil technology that, you know, as you have a more advanced race, and it is going to be a race, there's going to be a couple. There's going to be the tin cans. There's going to be the software-based tin cans, and then there's going to be the hybrids. And that really is kind of where the future is headed, is to integrate us, to augment humans. Because, you know, that cortex that connects us physically to our brain is low speed. If we can get it to be high speed, well, then we can plug ourselves right into the machine. And that's kind of where, in the future, that's where this brain project is coming from. That's why they want to understand a lot of it, not only to reproduce it, to make artificial intelligence mimicking a human brain, but they also want to be able to upload and download your essence, eventually. In a lecture at the University of Cambridge just this week, Stephen Hawking made the bold claim that the creation of artificial intelligence will be, quote, either the best or the worst thing to ever happen to humanity. The talk was celebrating the opening of his new Leverhulme, we talked about this yesterday, Center of the Future of Intelligence, where some of the best minds in science will try to answer questions about the future of robots and artificial intelligence, something Hawking says we need to do a lot more of. We spend a great deal of time studying history, Hawking told the lecture, which, let's face it, is mostly the history of stupidity, because we destroy ourselves over and over and over again. But despite all of our time looking back at past errors, we seem to make the same mistakes over and over again, like I said. And so, it is a welcome change that people are studying, instead, the future of intelligence. This is not the first time that Hawking has been worried about AI. Last year, he joined Elon Musk and hundreds of other experts in writing an open letter asking the governments to ban autonomous weapons, and we're going to look at those here. We've got about 10 minutes still. That might one day be able to turn against humans. He also previously said that the development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race, unquote. In Wednesday's lecture, he admitted that he was still worried about, quote, powerful autonomous weapons and new ways for the few to oppress the many, unquote, which come with artificial intelligence. But, he said, if we can think about and address these issues now, the technology does have the potential to do good. Maybe. I don't think so. I don't think any of it's going to be good. Maybe if it was in a little box somewhere, not connected to the internet, it might be good. But once you start giving it the capability to swarm learn, and you set it free on the internet of everything to go do its bidding without any human intervention at all, you gotta be afraid. I'm pretty scared of this, to be honest with you. We cannot predict what we might achieve when we open our minds and they are amplified by AI. Yeah. Perhaps the tools of this new technological revolution we'll be able to undo some of the damage done to the natural world by the last one. We read that quote yesterday. And surely we will aim to finally eradicate disease and poverty. The center, the Leverhulme Center of the Future of intelligence at the University of Cambridge, where Hawking is a professor, has received more than $12 million in grants to run research projects that will enhance the future potential of AI while carefully addressing the risks. The center was inspired partly by the university's Center for Existential Risk, which already offers courses in the subjects such as Terminator Studies. I guess they do have a class called that. In order to examine the future potential problems for humanity. While the center focuses on a range of threats such as climate change, and war, the new Lever-Hulme Center will specifically look at issues that could arise from machines that think and learn like humans. Machine intelligence will be one of defining themes of our century and the challenges of ensuring that we make the most of the opportunities, which are the ones we all face together. With Google already developing AI that can learn from its own memory, Elon Musk is worrying about humans becoming the dumb house pets of the AI in the future, and computer systems are already rivaling humans in IQ tests, and it's definitely something worth thinking about sooner rather than later. And Hawking says it might end up being, quote, crucial to the future of our civilization and our species. Quite interesting, people. Because not only are the robots going to take all of our jobs, but yes, the robots might actually be our future overlords. So I had a story come out right at the end of September. I started this at the end of the show yesterday. Will we be ready when robots attack? This is out of the Wall Street Daily. Have no fear. When the robots make their move against humanity, companies like Amazon, DeepMind, Google, Facebook, IBM, and Microsoft will have our backs. And these are the guys that apparently are supposed to be building in a kill switch. Yeah, like we trust all the tech titans that are in bed with the feds, that are the ones that are working on developing all kinds of autonomous killing software in the future. I don't think that they're the ones that should be aiding the development of the kill switch. I think the kill switch should be, like Obama said, just pull the plug on it. Of course, all the experts in the industry said that was a pretty naive thought on that, Obama. You can't just pull the plug on this stuff once the genie's out of the bottle. And when you consider this new prediction by experts, by 2040, more crime will be committed by machines than by humans. You need to worry that if we're going to give these things the ability to reason, the ability to learn, the ability to evolve, the ability to read through a million pages of text or books in a second or two, become our oncologists and our lawyers and who knows what else, judges. But they're going to become the criminals. You got to wonder where that's going to leave us. It says, for the past couple decades, the trend of technology development has been toward maximizing the capacities of computers and machines, like I talked about at the beginning of the show, to do tasks that people would rather not do, or at least ones that machines could do cheaper. And in an interview with Renkator, Chief Strategy and Innovation Officer for the Future Laboratory, her name is Tracy Fellows, predicts that 35% of jobs currently done by humans could be taken over by robots one day, and I've seen even a bigger number than that. And those jobs would include those that are tedious or dangerous and saving innumerable hours and lives. Oh, yes, it's all for your good. The landmark achievement of the 21st century is arguably artificial intelligence, and with the writing of some strings of code, machines can now perceive their environment, process relevant information, execute actions that provide the highest probability of success as well. And further innovations in AI are often driven by the elimination of human error Yes, puny humans. The increased reliance on AI, however, comes with considerable risks. Artificial intelligence, in whatever form it may take, is run by a specific set of commands, and it renders it vulnerable to hacking and many other forms of attack and manipulation. And that's something that Elon was talking about in one of those interviews we were watching yesterday as well. Is, you know, if we develop all this stuff, what if we have a foreign actor or a hacker get in and steal the code? I mean, we could develop something that is taken and used against us very easily. Fellow also predicts that by 2040, more crime will be committed by machines than humans. And while most machines powered by AI are programmed to do specific jobs, that's it, narrow AI, these technological wonders could also be commanded to learn. We found that out. A couple different projects now. Exceptionally powerful programs could be wired to learn how to bypass security measures or wreak havoc with classified information, GPS telemetry, sensory input, etc. And what is more problematic is that this coincides with the integration of the Internet of Things. Ding. The presence of the Internet in day-to-day living and all your little devices. And with more and more devices being retooled to facilitate easier living, we are now surrounding ourselves with more ways to be victimized by cybercrime. Hey, guys, remember DARPA Grand Challenge software. Again, I'm going to tell you, they're setting us up to launch that genie. Thankfully, the future, the grim future, is avoidable. Ex-FBI counterterrorism operative and present carbon black national security strategist Eric O'Neill is confident that with so much at stake, companies invested in the Internet of Things will act way before an attack happens. And he says, hey, the good guys are going to fight them all off, so don't worry about it, because the AI crime won't hurt you. Just take a little bit of intelligent software on the Internet to take care of everything, and we will fix the problem. All right, guys, make sure you stick around as Lonnie Clark is live up next, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.